Hello and welcome to a very special episode of Something Rotten. Why is it special? It's because we are hearing from you, the listeners. This is our Q&A Bill mailbag episode on Disco Elysium, a game that I've heard people have thoughts about. My name is Jacob Geller. I'm joined by Blake Hester. Hi, Blake.
By God. We're opening in the mail sack, Jacob. This is Blake and Jacob's big fat sack.
He said it, not me.
Here's the thing. Okay, can I keep it real with you, Jacob? These are increasingly my favorite episodes to record because it's just me and you, which on the one hand means it's less work to edit. On the other hand, by God, this is how the show used to be done. Just me and you, and a guest was a little treat. Now, a solo pod between us is the little treat, because we have guests nearly every episode.
I demanded, I said I cannot record another episode with only you, Blake. If we're going to talk about a game, I need someone else there. But now it's just
Shut up. That's fucking rude.
Yeah, it's also not true. We like having guests. We like having that little perspective. But I agree. I like...
You know what? No. Let's be honest. We like the benefits of having a bigger audience by having guests. You know, let's not lie. Let's not sugarcoat.
Oh, so you don't enjoy any of the immensely talented and smart people?
I hate them all. I hate all of them. No, of course I do. I'm just kidding. But, you know, here's the thing. Having guests on the show, ultimately, was the better decision than not having guests. But it means I miss just talking to you.
Yeah, it's true. Blake, first off, on our Q&A sheet, there's a little... It's in a different font. It says merch bitch. What is that?
By God. All right, folks. Here's the thing. We're doing another drop of Something Rotten merch. I don't think we can commit to this totally, but the plan is this is going to be a quarterly thing. It's been 4 months since the last one, so...
That's...
Can't commit 4 months from now, but we are committing to this quarter. At least.
Also, 4 months is not a quarter. That's a third.
Four, eight. Oh yeah.
It's gonna be a triannual thing.
A triannual event.
That's right.
Anyway, who fucking gives a shit? We got new Something Rotten merch, and Jacob, by God, I was proud of the last drop. I still am. I assume you were /am.
Mm-hmm.
But this new drop kind of kicks the shit out of it.
That's right. If you bought that Heather shirt, you're a goddamn fool.
let's give the lowdown. So, in celebration of the Disco Elysium season, which unintentionally was, I'm fairly certain, our biggest season to date. We didn't make merch because we're like, this will be our biggest one. It just worked out that way. We're doing a Disco Elysium-inspired shirt. This is made by Louisville, Kentucky legends from The Void Clothing, who we've shouted out numerous times on this pod before. Johnny, who runs that, he helped us with the last batch. He wasn't like... I wouldn't say he was doing art for the last shirt. This is one where we were like, you make... your own thing.
We were like, go crazy. Here are 40 yeah. images that kind of have vibes that we like. And then he exactly. just went off.
We sent him a Google Drive of like a mood board and just said, make whatever you want. So we have the shirts with a quote we talked about on the show from Ken Kutsuragi. I know doom when I see it still. I think my favorite quote in the entire game,
good.
Even though it is kind of like a throwaway line. And then original art from The Void /Johnny. And then we have hats as well. We're double dipping. We have Silent Hill inspired hats that say Something Rotten.
A little Heaven's Night neon font. Kind of looks like you went to a strip club called Something Rotten. That's very cool.
That wild name for a strip club. But we're keeping Heather in the merch game. It does have a Heather Mason quote on the back. I almost said a Heather Graham quote. Shouts out to Heather Graham. Love you, honey. A Heather Mason quote on the back says, one sleazy paradise. I think these are fire as hell. We're keeping in the family again. going to Louisville, Kentucky shirt printer. The hats will not be printed in Kentucky, but still going to Indie Outlet. No Redbubble, no any Teespring, that garbage.
Yeah, it's like, I don't mean to brag, but like, we got so many people being like, oh, this is like a real shirt. When they got our last one, I think people are so used to merch being just like dog shit quality that when they get something, it's like, oh, I can like put this through the washer and it doesn't disintegrate. People are very happy about it. My partner Annie has been doing garden work in the Something Rotten Heather shirt, striking up conversations with our 70-year-old neighbor while wearing Something Rotten merch. That could be you with I Know Doom When I See It, a Something Rotten Disco Elysium drop.
Well, here's the important thing. Wrapping up the announcement of the next merch drop. So they're available now, pre-orders. Pre-orders will be open for 2 weeks. Both items are $30. So $30 for the shirt, which was the price of the last one, $30 for the hat. Allow time for printing and everything. These are not things we'll be shipping out as soon as you buy it. It will take a bit. And then international listeners, I love you so much. Thank you to everyone who bought things from around the world. I can't do anything about that international shipping cost. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
But God love you if you decide to pay for it. But that's just how it goes. For everyone else, it'll be a bit less.
Shout out to the country of Romania, who we were number one in the charts with.
Hey, if you listen in Romania, please write in. I don't know if our podcast is huge there or podcast as an industry is small there. But we were number one in on the Romania leisure charts.
Yeah, fucking take that, The ever. Daily.
Yeah, it's the hard. We weren't number one.
We were number one in Romania, Blake. Don't tell me any more details.
But if you listen to Romania, please listen in. And if you listen to Romania, if you love us so much, please buy the shirt and the hat. Anyway, that's it. That's the news.
Yeah, thank you all for listening to us pitch. Let's get to some questions.
Let's get to some
question. We have a lovely listener named Travis who wrote in and said, in episode 3, Blake mentioned how playing as a compassionate Harry made him a bad cop. Jacob also mentioned how, in the game, you're forced to make some big choices or you end up just getting played by everyone. I know this is a loaded question that compares dumb video games to very real-world problems, but has playing Disco Elysium changed your perspective on what it could mean to be a cop or detective in the real world? Love the pod and all that, Travis.
This second question, pretty similar, so we're going to add it. I am excited to hear you two talk about one of my favorite games. Hope it lived up to your expectations, Brandon. One of my favorite parts about Disco Elysium is how it deconstructs the notion of a good cop and bad cop through Kim Kutsuragi. Were a cop like Harry to do something like that in real life, we would all likely call for his resignation, among other things. Nevertheless, because of his high esprit de corps skill, Kim absolutely covers for you. To the player, this might make him one of the good cops. However, to any other civilian, this would just make Kim another example of how the police force refuses to hold their own accountable, making him a bad cop, even if he is a morally upstanding person. That's a really interesting point. I thought it was an interesting way to demonstrate that the institution of policing is inherently flawed and that no matter what, there is no good cop, even if Kim's patience and empathy towards Harry's situation is inherently kind-hearted and to our benefit. I was wondering if the idea of being a good cop informed your playthroughs and what being a good cop meant to you as you played as Harry, even if being a good cop is an impossible task. I love your podcast. Keep up the great work. We will.
Thanks, Brandon.
That comes from Brandon.
Yeah, I think those are good to pair together. And I really love, Brandon's point about like the things that endear Kim to you are things that like as a civilian, you'd be like, bro, what the fuck?
Right. It's an interesting distinction, right? And I do not say this lightly because it's Penn State ACAB. Mm-hmm. SR stands for ACAB. But it's an interesting to draw that line that Brandon's kind of drawing here. It's like you can be a good person and still a bad cop because all cops are bad.
Yeah,
you know what I'm
saying?
I think
like, that's...
Kim is effectively that in this story. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I was going to say exactly the same thing, which is that Kim is... There is little doubt in my mind that Kim is a good person. And I think that, like, when you are talking you know, when you're doing an institutional critique, when you are looking at things as a broad structure and not just a collection of individuals, obviously we know that, like, some bad apples is a bullshit excuse for, like, cops being shitty. The idea that there are just some bad cops and they get all the press and that's why people think cops are bad is stupid. It's also the case that, like, even though there are a lot of good people who are cops, they are still doing cop shit and they can't, like, change... They can't change the facts of the institution. You know, like...
For sure.
No matter how good they are. And so I think that it's an astute point from both Travis and Brandon that, like, I think you can be like an accomplished detective in this game and you can try and be a good person, but, like, it does not seem like there's a way out of this that kind of makes the police as a unit seem, I don't know. See, even if you hit every dice roll, I think you would still come out of this game being like, the police really fucked, you know, Revachol and Martinez over.
Yeah.
Because that's like, that is core to understanding what those places are, is like the police failed them.
Yeah.
And Harry and Kim are still kind of failing them.
I certainly don't feel like I set out to play my game as a good cop rather than I wanted to explore Harry as a good person and the recovery in the game. And it, like, we talked about it in the episode, and I still find it endlessly fascinating that through doing that, I felt like a bad cop. Like perhaps humanly good, professionally bad, you know? And I think that, like, speaks to the writing of the game, that it reflects that unbreakable truth. Like, a good person is not a good cop.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, and I said as much, that it was, like, playing with a bunch of my kind of fascist skills made me feel good at cop shit, you know, that I was able to kind of, like, intimidate and bully people in ways that I wasn't able to if I was going for kind of the empath Harry build.
This is maybe just my failure as a once prospective player, but, like, going into the game, I had never stopped to consider that it would be a critique of police, which in retrospect is obvious, right? Uh-huh. Like, it's obvious that it would be, and even what little I knew about the game, I should have thought about it, but, like, it is just one of the things I did not think about going into Disco Elysium, that it was, like, going to be a text that's also about, like, ACAB, stay with it, you know?
No, it's funny because that's how I, like, sell people to the game. I'm like, it's a game where you play, like, a, you know, amnesiac cop, and it's written by communists who hate cops. Like, that's my pitch.
Yeah. Is it? I know you and I have talked privately about this, but isn't there an interesting irony that one of the greatest setups of any media is, like, a good cop tale? And yet cops are the worst thing we have to deal with in our everyday life. But it's like, you can be a hard-boiled, like, cop drama, movie, book, show. And I was like, I'm in it. Like, I'm in it. Yes, I want that so bad.
I mean, and it's unfortunately, I think, because those media are so good, it's why we think of the cops as, like, a helpful institution. Because it's like, look, sure, man, yeah. I saw fucking... I've read a bunch of noirs. I've seen this shit. They're figuring stuff out.
Yeah.
Have you seen the Coen Brothers film The Big Lebowski?
Yes.
It's
been a long time though.
One of my favorite bits from that is his car gets stolen with a briefcase that he thinks has like $1 million in it.
Mm-hmm.
And he eventually finds it at kind of like a junkyard, and he's talking to a cop, and he's like, okay, yeah, looks like some people, like, you know, they stole it, and then they, like, had sex in it, and then they, like, defecated in it, and anyway, here's your car. And he's like, hey, have you found, like, my briefcase that was in the trunk? And he's like, oh, yeah, man, we've got everyone at the lab working on that. We got them working in shifts. And he's, like, cracking up at the idea that, like, they would ever be helpful.
Semi-related. You ever heard of Lebowski Fest?
I've heard of it.
It's a real thing. It's a huge celebration of the film The Big Lebowski. Brother, Louisville, Kentucky's own. That was one of our big things. We started Lebowski Fest, which I think became more a wider thing. I don't know. I don't think it happens anymore. As we always say, all roads lead back to Louisville, Kentucky, the greatest city on earth.
That's, we always say it.
Next question.
Avolance says, do you have any thoughts on where other developers could take the disco-like genre?
I saw this question, Jacob. I'll be honest, I didn't know what to think about it, but I included it because I wondered if you had any interesting thoughts.
Yeah, well, disco-like genre is a weird thing because it's like...
Is that just a CRPG?
Right, and it's like, okay, maybe it means a CRPG without combat. You know, like, that's sure. That's a big difference between this and any of your other kind of, you know, difference between this and Baldur's Gate, difference between right. this and Planescape Torment, whatever. I mean, in the bonus... Or, go ahead.
Sorry, does it just mean the thematics of the game?
Right, yeah, that's... Because yeah. It's like, in the bonus episode on Nebula, which no one will have listened to yet at the time of this episode's release.
It's not true. This comes out the week after.
Oh, that's right. Okay, well, on the bonus episode on Nebula, I mentioned Norco and Citizen Sleeper as two games that are very, like, indebted to a lot of the style of Disco Elysium, really, and just, like, the way they write dialogue or, like, the, yeah. you know, and kind of also they are certainly critiques of capitalism. They are games that are very entranced with, like, the specific place that they happen in. You know, like, there are a lot of similarities, but I don't know, other than those just being kind of RPGs with a lot of words in them, or Norco isn't even really an RPG. It's like, do you call those disco likes?
I don't know what to think about this. Like, I'm stumped on it.
Yeah, well, and this is also maybe a good opportunity to talk about, did you see, it was floating around Twitter the other day for me, but like, what, I forget if it was Robert Kurvitz or like some of the other writers, but they had kind of threw out their potential idea for Disco Elysium 2. Did you see this?
Oh, no, I didn't. I only saw recently that it was canceled.
Right. So, yeah, they've had several games, both kind of the actual Disco Elysium. It's like, you know, the original creators of the property were, like, forcibly removed from Zaum, and so we would have never seen their Disco Elysium 2.
Right.
But then other developers who were still there were working on a different Disco Elysium 2, and that was also canceled. And yeah, it seems, I mean, I don't think we'll ever see a kind of meaningful game from the studio called Zaum again. But the original idea for it, apparently, that someone had just thrown out was that you were going to be playing a pregnant woman, and some of the dialogue, like the internal thoughts, would be like you talking with your baby that she was carrying, which, having just seen Dune 2, I'm like, hell yeah, brother.
That's pretty cool. I'm into it.
I love it. It's so weird.
I'm not really into the idea of another Disco Elysium, but that's a pretty interesting idea.
I mean, my guess is, and this is not based on anything other than what I would do with it, but it's like, you just do a totally different part of the world. Like, the only... Sure. It's just... The only thing linking it together is, like, when you're playing it, you know that Revachol also exists somewhere in here, and whatever. Because it's, like, it's such a rich world that they made. I don't think there need to be any characters overlapping, really. Right. You know,
they get Kuno.
Yeah, Kuno. Of course. Kuno is in both. He's kind of like Cid in Final Fantasy. You put him in all of them. But, yeah, it's, like, I don't want another game starring Harry, but... I would totally take another game in the Disco Elysium universe.
What do you think? Okay, so, like, a CRPG is such a natural fit for the story they were trying to tell, right?
Sure.
But do you, when we consider the disco, like, what if you decouple it from genre? Like, what is a different type of game that it could work for? Like, could you make a third-person shooter Disco Elysium game? You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, you know, it's like, my other thoughts for genre, none of them are, they're not really AAA genres. You know, sure. Like, I think you could do, You could do like a Kentucky Route Zero, which is honestly kind of like a Disco Elysium where you just don't really role play. You don't like make choices. You know, you could do a walking simulator. I think you could maybe do like a tactics game of sorts.
Yeah, interesting.
But it's like what I don't want. I just don't want the like kill count in a Disco Elysium game to be over like 4 at most.
Yeah.
You know, that feels like if you were just like, if you had like gunplay as a basic gameplay verb, that would kind of suck the interestingness out of it.
I mean, it's a bit of a boring answer. Like tactics is way cooler, but like a walking sim.
Sure.
Like a first person walking sim that is effectively an arcane game sans combat, but like, and by an arcane game, I just mean that you can open all the drawers.
Yeah. Like, just super world like, building.
Yeah, like that. I would love to play that Disco Elysium, where I can just open everything. But it's in first-person perspective this time, crucially.
Yeah, I mean, I would... Yeah, it is the world more than the genre that defines these games. And so I feel like that does let it go to different things.
Yeah. You ready for the next one?
Do you have things to say about this? Because I don't.
I have a really quick thing to say about it. I figured I'd answer it because we got a couple questions about it.
Do you want to just, instead of reading this whole thing, do you want to just sum them up?
Yeah, just a couple people wrote in about the Nick Mullen, Dick Mullen, Dirtbag Left Association, Dasha being in the game, blah, 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 blah. I had a bit of a rant about the Cumtown reference. It didn't really hinder my enjoyment of the game, folks. It was a bit, it was a joke. I thought that was obvious. It super did not faze me. I mean, whether or not there's any broader conversation to have about the association with the Dirtbag Left and what that means to the game's beliefs or the developer's beliefs or whatever the case may be, that's a separate conversation. Me saying I wanted to not play the game because there's a character named Dick Mullen was a goof. That was a joke. So I guess I'm too good of an actor. However, I don't know. Do you have anything to say about just like, it feels like we were dredging up an old conversation by even bringing up the Dirtbag Left and Disco Elysium.
Yeah, it's...
That didn't really exist anymore, but do you have anything to say about it? I personally don't.
No, I mean, you know, I think the... It is... I've never listened to Chapo or Cumtown or any of these things. I don't really have a take on them. You know, if you watch Chris Bratt's reporting on the development of this game, there are certainly some accusations of kind of like toxic workplace happenings at Zaum, including kind of the elements of misogyny from team leads and whatever. Cumtown and specifically doesn't seem to maybe it ironically hates women, but you know, something that I would be certainly embarrassed to be listening to while, like, my partner walked in the room. So, just things to be aware of.
Sure.
But, like, I don't think it's, like, vital meta text for the game in any way.
Can I hold myself accountable, Jacob?
Please.
The other day, I willingly put on the Adam Friedland Show. For those who may not know, Jacob included. The Adam Friedland Show is the spiritual successor to Cumtown, which Adam Friedland and Nick Mullen host, the other one, Stavros, whatever the fuck his name is. He's not involved with it. Because he gets, have you seen, like, the people he interviews? It's wild.
Nope.
He got, like, Andrew Cuomo on there recently. But he had Paul Schrader on. He had an interview with Paul Schrader. So, actually, I listened to it, and, you know, Paul Schrader seems like he's losing it a little bit up top, and it was kind of a hard interview to get through, so. I just wanted to hold myself accountable and say I did listen to a Dirtbag Left podcast willingly the other day. I threw it on.
We're very glad to hear it. Annie, I'm recording a podcast.
Sorry.
That's fine. It's just with Blake. He says hi.
I didn't say hi.
I assumed
you would. The listeners will know. The listeners just heard your lie. Does Annie listen
edit
to this
it
show?
Out.
Does Annie listen to Something Rotten? It's okay if she doesn't.
No.
So she won't know that you just lied. Wow.
Yeah.
However, my partner, who does listen to this show, will hear you lie, and then when she meets Annie, she's probably going to tell her.
I'm so sorry I made you seem more polite than you were.
Well, I'm a polite individual. I didn't need help, but you're a liar, and that's a real problem, Jacob.
Oliver says...
Paul Schrader was on, I don't know, he was on the Adam Friedland show. It seems like he's kind of losing his mind a little bit. That's the point of it.
Oliver says, I remember Jacob talking about the game somewhere, possibly Minmax, and he brought up a specific piece of optional side content that he said he tries to get everyone that plays the game to play because it contains the whole point of the game. I was just curious on what that was so I don't miss it myself. P.S. Thanks for the podcast. Personal fave. Also, congrats, Jacob, on the book. It looks fire. Thank you. The book that will feature Blake Hester. Also me. That...
It's actually Jacob's book I'm writing.
That's right. Oliver, that was specifically, it. You know, it's weird because it's main path, but missable as Blake missed. It's the conversation with the bug. You know, that's what I'm like. When I'm talking to people, I'm always kind of like, because the bug statistics, you know, like your ability to talk to it go up if, for example, you do that cryptid quest and you get sprayed with, like, the cryptid spray that, like, boosts your probability and stuff. And so it's just like, you know, I want everyone to get there. And Blake, maybe I should have done a better job of telling you to, like, pump up your shiver stat or whatever. But yeah. I liked that, you know, I think it's, even though it's unfortunate for you to miss it, it's kind of more interesting in a broad sense. That it's like, hey, it's missable. You know, like, this is not, the game doesn't make sure everyone gets it.
I agree. Here's the next question, Jacob. It's actually not a question, but I included it for a reason. I don't think it's a question. We'll find out if it's a question when I get to the end. And one of your podcast appearances, this was a message, I believe the subject line was, for Blake. So I hope it's okay, Mark, that Jacob's hearing this. In one of your podcast appearances, you mentioned making an effort to not stare at your phone while commuting. I believe that was on this podcast. I think you referred to it as not staring at a fucking light. Thank you for having that discussion. As someone who commutes every day, having such a short, sharp phrase for what sucks about modern life has really stuck in my head. I've reconnected with music I passively listened to for years, or I've discovered the view between the stops for the first time. It's not really a comment for the podcast, more of an appreciation. Your insights are helping another addict find some joy in the world. Love your work. Thank you so much, Mark. And I will say, Jacob, I would assume this doesn't apply to you as much because you drive. Like, you also work.
Well, I also don't commute. Yeah, I commute from my bedroom to my office.
Yeah. Well, I work from home, but, you know, when I do have to leave, I can't drive. Anyway, yeah. Neither here nor there. Mark, I was going through a pretty gnarly phase of staring at my phone too much immediately after saying that. And then I saw your email come in. And this past weekend, of course, I looked at my phone. I sent a tweet or two out. But, like, your email embedded in my brain. I walked, in 3 days, Jacob, I walked 60,000 plus steps.
That's a lot.
Barely looked at my phone the entire time. In fact, I wish I would have looked at my phone a little more so I would have taken some pictures on those walks. I realized after the fact, I was like, I should have taken more pictures. But I just, you know, let's all stare at our phones a little less, folks.
I feel like that is, I didn't think you were talking about walking when you were, I pictured you on the subway.
Well, it started with the subway, but then I realized it was getting better at the subway. Was getting worse in other aspects of my life. Like, I'm walking down the street fucking looking at it. And so, like, now I have my little, what do you call those things?
It's like a fanny pack.
but not on the fanny.
Like a messenger bag?
Yeah, so I got that back out. I put my phone in there so I'm not feeling it in my pocket.
That's smart.
Feeling it vibrate and everything. Like, I'm on it.
I'll tell you, so, I've been feeling real, real brain poisoned lately by just, like, do you ever have that thing where you're trying to write and you write like one sentence and then you just like look at your phone for a while and then you're like, I got to go back. And then you write like one more sentence and you do it. Yep. And I get so frustrated. I'm like throwing it across the room because it just can't be within like arm's length. I really feel like, and I'm sure it hasn't started recently and maybe the fact that I'm noticing it is better, but like it is just like a muscle memory where I just pick up my phone and start looking at it based on no desire at all, where I'm just like, why, what am I yeah. hoping to see when I open this up? Like, what's the goal here? And I think the goal is like, my brain is like, I need stimulation. I can't be in here by myself, which sucks because it's like when you're writing, you have to just be in there by yourself because that's where words come from.
I feel like so much of our modern era, at least for privileged idiots like us, is just rediscovering the natural feelings of life. And one of them this weekend, granted, Jacob, I don't know if this surprised you, Lauren, I would say my baseline emotion 90% of the time is mildly annoyed.
A little cranky.
That's just like, yeah, that's just how I kind of navigate the world. I really am trying to work on it. However, I'll say this weekend, I did all this walking. I was, probably because I was getting so much sun, I was just so happy. Like, there was one point I was walking and all I could think about was how happy I was. That's how happy I was. And then at the end of the day, when I would pull out my phone and look at Twitter, I would realize within seconds I was pissed off.
Yep.
And I was like, that's saying something. Uh-huh. And again, part of our privileged life at this point is just rediscovering maybe living feels good. You know, it's like, oh yeah, I forgot that it's fun to live sometimes. But anyway, Mark, I appreciated your email. I'm glad you wrote that in.
This one is from Owen. First off, thanks for doing Disco this season, finally giving me a reason to play through it and take it off my backlog fully. I have been, this is Jacob speaking, very pleased with how many people, it seems, are playing this for the first time because of our podcast. Like, I kind of thought that, like, anyone who was going to play it would have already by this point. But, like, hey. Wasn't true of Blake Hester until he played through it for this podcast. And there have been a lot of people as well who've been like kind of keeping up. And that's awesome to hear. Anyway, Owen continues. A question for Blake. I was curious when making the intro song for this season, was there any reason you didn't incorporate the Revachol horns? One of the biggest things that got me to buy the game was Jacob's video on it. And he talked about all the horns in the city. So it struck me as odd not hearing them in the intro. All the best. Can't wait for more.
Owen, I apologize. What are the Revachol horns?
You know, they're like, na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na, da-na-na-na-na.
Oh, that's why I included this question, so I could figure out what this is. No, they're cool, but, like, when I do a theme, I don't know. Like, that's a song. It already exists.
I think, I think earlier on, you were doing more mixing of themes where you would kind of like take a song from the game and kind of do something with it, and now I feel like what people might not appreciate is like you are just making a fully original work. Like I think you were kind of inspired by what, like the Whirling in Rags theme, but it's not like you're using the same melody or something. Like you're just kind of going off the vibes.
Owen, I think it's a totally fair question, but like especially at this point, like, I vibe it out. I really like that Whirling and Rag song a lot. Mainly because it reminds me, I meant to bring this up on the bonus episode, it reminds me so much of the Joan of Arc song off Live in Chicago 98, one of their cooler records. Live in Chicago 1999, their song If It Feels Good, Do It. Like, one of those songs will get stuck in my head, and then the other will naturally get stuck in my head. It's very strange. So I was listening to that song, and then was just fucking around on GarageBand. Did something that felt a little disco-y. So I don't know. You know, actually, to Owen's point, I did download a horn plugin and found it just did not sound good to me. Like, it felt like you could tell it wasn't real. Which, believe it or not, folks, I'm not tracking real drums on those. Like, those are fake drums. But, like, it just felt artificial to me. And, like, the guitar felt so, like, good. The guitar is real. But, like, that I didn't, like, I was into the guitar sound that I did cut out the horns. So there was, Owen, a bit of an attempt to do horns, but I just kind of went off on my own track.
And I really enjoy how, like, I am not, I mean, I guess I've been taking piano for, like, close to 2 years now, but I don't think of myself as, like, a musician, and I think of you as that. But, like, I feel like just when we are sonically thinking about the a game, we often come at it from, like, pretty different perspectives. Like, what you did for the Metal Gear season theme would be nothing close to what I would have done for the Metal Gear season. And it's like, I don't think it's bad, but it's like, you know, when I think about that game,
yeah,
it's very kind of like, oh, we've got like the soaring kind of patriotic sounding
for
things,
sure,
and like the military drums, and you identifying more of like the like alert noise, you know, whatever things. It's just like, it's cool because it's like we are kind of hearing different parts of it or connecting to different sounds in that universe.
For sure. And there are definitely some parts of it that are intentional, and there's plenty of parts of it that there's no intentionality into it. Like, I'm sure if you asked me when I was setting to make the MGS thing, I thought it was going to be closer to the actual score of that, and just somehow over the course of a week, it became that thing instead.
Right.
And it's like, and the way it actually got there is completely like out of my brain the second I hit export on it. And the disco one, for example, was like, there was going to be more instrumentation in it until I just landed on that guitar. And actually, fun fact, Jacob, that guitar's run through two different amps at the same time, which is how it gets that real crackly sound. Once I stumbled upon that, I was like, oh, I'm good. And I just exported it. So I appreciate what you're saying, but like 50% of it is, totally just stumbling my way through the dark.
And that's
good enough. I got to finish an episode. Send it out. Yeah.
All right.
They're fun to work on.
Take on this next question from Nate.
I'm loving the discussion of my favorite game. Jacob mentioned trying to find a way to sleep on the street to avoid paying Gart on the first night. Not long after Disco Elysium released, I was determined to find a way to sleep in the dumpster behind the Whirling and Rags. I don't remember why. I think there were hints alluding to the possibility. I did eventually find a way to go to sleep in the dumpster on the first night, only to find that it gives you a game over screen with a news story about a local cop sleeping in the dumpster. Back when I did it, I think I was one of the first people to figure it out, because I couldn't find anything online about it. So yes, you can sleep in the dumpster, but your story ends there. I guess there's no coming back from that.
That's very funny.
Very funny. Yeah. Shouts out.
There are so many. I mean, it's like, I remember hearing Scott Benson talk about, like, a thing where you can get in like a head nodding contest with
Kim. I did that.
But if you do it for too long, you break your own neck, and there's a game over screen. And like,
oh, I didn't break my neck, but it did hurt me.
It did hurt.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. There was a lot of that. I mean, it's just fun being early on enough in a game that you feel like you're finding things that no one else has found. This episode comes out on April 10th, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so on April 9th is the embargo for a game that I've recently played called Children of the Sun, which is that one that you've been looking at. I'm not gonna talk about the game. I think you'll like it. This is the like kind of sniping puzzle game where you're bouncing your bullet in between people. But I beat that game the day I got code for it, and I think I was the second person to beat it outside like internal dev circles, because there's a leaderboard, and when I finished the last level, there was only one other name on it. So I was like, hey, there we go. Yakum G42, number one in the world right now.
I am so impossibly excited for that game. The demo was so good.
Yeah.
Fun fact, the creator listens to this show.
Oh,
what do I got to do to get a code out here? But by the time you're listening to this, I have gladly spent my money on the game because I am so excited.
It does remind me of
what do I got to do to get a damn code around here?
Blake, do you remember when another one of your favorite games, Neon White, came out, and pre-release, there were several times where like it would be like the top five, and you and I would both be on there because so few people had played the game.
I'm fairly convinced I was the first person in the world outside of dev and pub side of things to 100% Spider-Man 2, a game I didn't even really like that much. I'm pretty sure I was the first person, because I did it within like less than 72 hours. it was wild. So I should, do you think that's a fun story idea, trying to track that down? I mean, it's only a good idea if the answer is yes, but like,
yeah, I mean, and you would have to get, I feel like the only way to do it would be through like trophies. And that would be really hard.
I mean, Insomniac may just have a way of figuring it out. They collect a lot of weird data, these big companies.
That's true. It's like, I don't think they would give you anyone else's, but they might give you yours. It would be cool to, I think we're pitching a story live on this now, but like, I think the first, I don't know, 24 hours, first week after a game comes out, just like seeing what the devs are watching would be really interesting. Ooh, because we know that they look at streams. We know that they kind of like find people in like the Hades doc that NoClip did. There's a lot of footage of like them watching streamers play the game, which is such a weird thing to consider. But yeah, I would love to know, like, are they looking at trophy statistics? Do they have weird back-end stuff that just tells them, like, how often players are dying or, like, all of that stuff?
Did I ever tell you about the time a developer did text me while I was streaming their game?
No.
It was mortifying. This was years ago. This is before I even moved to Minneapolis. The timestamp wasn't necessary, but now, listener, imagine it if you will. Blake was living in Louisville still. We had Leo on to a GI stream, and we were doing a Red Dead stream of some new update had come out, and we were like, oh, this will be really fun. Let's do Red Dead roleplay. We were dog shit at it. It's like humiliating how bad we were at this game, and I'm sure it's really frustrating for Leo because we were just like fucking around. And we got stuck on something. You ever see a streamer get stuck on something and it stops being funny because they're so stuck?
Yep.
This is what I feel like it probably was. I can't remember totally, but I remember like we just couldn't do something, and I'm sure it was not fun to watch. Anyway, I checked my phone, and we were so bad at it that someone from Rockstar, it was just a PR person over there who had my number, had sent me like a dozen texts trying to tell me how to finish.
I mean, probably because you were like making the game look bad.
Yeah, and I missed all the texts because I wasn't looking at my phone, and I was mortified to figure out that, one, I had the answer the whole time, two, that they were watching us make their game look terrible. I had never even considered. So fun fact, there you go.
Chris says, what were your guys' expectations going into this game? I've miraculously completely avoided any spoilers and just picked it up on sale in preparation for this season. I was not prepared for just how rotten this game is. I knew you played a cop with drug issues, and from what my friends told me, it's a game where you solve mysteries, revel in degeneracy, and can be gay and do communism. This fantasy quickly turned into a nightmare in which I am so out of shape and uncharismatic that my only option is to proceed to literally internalize advanced race theory, and the game seems to have an everyone sucks and everyone's beautiful attitude that permeates every interaction. I'm curious, did you guys experience the same / similar whiplash?
I think the game, albeit censored, had more slurs than I expected.
Yeah.
Which is to say it had slurs at all. I didn't expect that, you know?
Did you? I found this out after we recorded, but like someone posted about it in my Discord. If you, there's a scene that we talked about where you can try and get Kim to dance with you in the club, in the church turned EDM thing.
Yeah.
If you fail that check, you call him the worst string of racial epithets, and it is like they are not censored, and it's not, it's like that you kind of, you wouldn't consider them, I don't want to say it, but it's like as individual words you would not consider them slurs,
right?
But like put together it is like, oh my fucking god, you know? It's like it's not really a, it's not like separated from our world. It's not like they're making up new things to call. You know, it's like Kim reads as Asian and they're basically calling him a bunch of Asian slurs. And Kim literally walks out of the room, and you go outside and he's like, what the fuck is wrong with you? And you can either like double down or you can apologize. And on either end, you're like, so we're good? And he's like, no, we're not good. Like, I'll stick around because I'm gonna finish this fucking case, but, like, we are not good.
Yeah, so, didn't really expect any of that. I think the game is more rotten than I expected. I don't think I expected it to not be rotten, but, like, this game fucking, it reeks, man. It's down in the dirt. It's putrid at times, and I really don't think I expected that.
Yeah, I think I think I potentially expected more. And I mean, I got to this game pretty early, so there wasn't the kind of level of conversation about it that there is now. I think I thought there would be more about alcoholism, actually. You know, it's like, as we talked about, it's not that hard to not be a drunk in this game,
right.
Which I was somewhat surprised by. But yeah, a lot of it was like, you know, not expecting like the level of crime scene writing that was like the number of words that the game uses to describe a corpse is just like so many more than you think it's going to be. And now I also feel like the kind of the problem with this game is like in the same way that whenever people talk about art as being like huge and important and kind of very artistic, like what gets lost is how funny the game is and how kind of like individualistic it is, that it's not, it doesn't seem like it's really trying to make a statement on like human race as a whole, you know, up until like the very end. Mostly it is just like telling a story very well. And when someone comes up to you and they're like, this is my favorite game I've ever played, it changed my outlook on like life and art, I feel like that sets kind of a bad set of expectations in your head.
I think, what you said a second ago is good for me too. I didn't expect this game to be funny at all. And it's like, it's not gut busting, but it is frequently LOLing.
That's right. Your gut remained intact, but you laughed out loud a little bit.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily know if this was a surprise, but it was one of those things where people talk about it with such reverence that it was like, people talk about it with such reverence that like any piece of media that is so acclaimed, when you go into it, you're like, is that going to land for me? Am I going to understand the hype? And Disco is one of them where I was like, oh yeah, totally get it.
People talk about, I feel like it's like, and I don't want to play into talking about the dumbest people in the world, but there's the whole kind of like anti-academic film movement where people are all like, oh, you like Citizen Kane, you're just like such a fucking poser. And it's like almost every old movie that people like was like made to be a crowd pleaser, you know. Like people are generally not making movies, unless you were literally making like Eraserhead or like, you know, a Tarkovsky, whatever. It's like Citizen Kane, it was a movie meant to be like watched by a bunch of people in a theater and have them laugh at it, you know. Like Lawrence of Arabia is like, that's like a fun sweeping movie. You're not supposed to be like, I am solemnly partaking the art during these things. And I feel like that's the kind of, when you get too reverent about something, people almost assume that it's going to have like a level of pretension that becomes boring.
For sure. Ready for the last question?
I'm ready.
This comes from Neil. I very much enjoy the podcast, and I wanted to suggest a game to cover. God of War 3. I've recently been replaying it, and it's about as rotten a game as can be, while being a terrific action game at the same time. Also, please, more on Alan Wake 2. No more on Alan Wake 2. However, wink, wink, nudge, nudge on the other one. Jacob, let's take it home. You ready to go?
Oh, okay, I feel like that's giving a false impression.
You think so?
I mean, let's talk
about it.
It's not on our schedule right now. I would love to do those.
It's on our schedule.
It is?
Let me look.
Right, we got a lot of things on our schedule then.
I'm going to the secret pinned thing, and I'm seeing an acronym that could either be God of War or Gears of War in there.
Okay.
So, that's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying, Neil.
Yeah. But we certainly would not only do three if we were doing
right. But, you know what? To give meaning to bringing this up, if that sounds exciting to you, drop us a line. Let us know. We don't necessarily base seasons on what we think would perform best, but it's good to know what people will be interested in. So,
sure.
If we're bringing up God of War, let us know. Hit us up. Tell us if you want that. Jacob, it's been a pleasure. I gotta pee, brother.
Hey, that's...
this is what I can say when we don't have guests. when it's just me and Jacob, I gotta fucking piss, man.
Hurry guests up, don't ever right? have to pee.
I'm not gonna tell Chris Pratt that, hey, Chris, I just met you. I gotta pee. Like, I'm not gonna tell him that.
That has been our Disco Elysium series. Thank you so much for listening to it. It has been a joy for me to revisit this game. Turns out it's as good as I remembered it. I hope that everyone is happy with Blake's response to this game, which I think has been very cool and interesting to listen to. Listen to the Nebula episode to learn what our next season is going to be on. Excited for that one. And until then, I'm Jacob Geller for Blake Hester. What's a Disco Elysium quote? I know Doom when I see it.
Yeah, there we go. Buy the merch. It's in the fucking description. Please.
Bye, everyone.
I'm unemployed. Buy the merch. Bye.